Good morning, everybody, and good afternoon. Whatever you're joining us from, depends on where you are, morning, afternoon, evening, it doesn't matter to us. We do podcasting and we do it well, and we try to follow the conversation wherever the conversation leads us. My name is Robin Ayoub. I'm with the Localization Fireside Chat. And today we are recording, I think, episode 200. And my guest of honor, Jürgen Dauch, he joins me from Hamburg, Germany. And we have two objectives today. One is we're going to get to know Jürgen. We're going to get to know him a little bit on how he started, where he is right now. And also we're going to get to know a little bit about what he does and what he's working on right now. To get started, most companies are spending millions of dollars on AI, and most of them are getting slower in some cases. My guest today has spent 25 years inside of Oracle, Avaya, Plainview, watching this happens from the inside. And of course, you guys know me, I'm a technologist by background, who turned a business development person and later on life business development plus podcast. So you know, we all get some multi-talented talents in our career as we move along in life's pathways. My guest, Jürgen, has built a framework called the Leadership Operating Systems to fix the exact reason AI fails in most organizations. And that's, you know, we've talked about this on the channel here quite often. It is not a system problem. It is in some cases a process, in some cases it's system. What I meant by system, it's not a technology problem in some cases. It is how the system is designed internally to absorb or take on the new technology that it is intended to be taken on. And also, we also were trying to cover today with Jürgen that it is not the technology, it is the leadership layer above it that basically bring all this together. What is the strategy to take this on? First, I want to welcome Jürgen. Jürgen, thank you for joining me and welcome to the channel.
Thanks for having me, Robin. Really an honor to be on your show. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate you joining me. And for the audience, if you don't mind, Jürgen, we start with the easy question first, and they're all going to be easy, don't worry. The easy question is that, what is your story? Everybody in life has got a story. And what got you here? What is your story, if you don't?
Yeah, sure. I'm more than happy to share. You know, as a kid, my dream was to become an inventor. So I can relate to what you said in terms of being a techie, being really fascinated with technology. So I started really with tech. So I got my first computer when I was 12. That was really in the early days of computer business, right? So it was a basic thing. You know, no games, just a bit of programming, but I got into that. And the closest to becoming an inventor was studying microelectronics. So I did that. And when joining the first company during university, I had to finance my studies, right? I started working for a small tech company that developed hardware and software. And, you know, I was really fascinated with that. But I also got to know the business side of things. And that fascinated me as well. So I moved from just being a techie into the business side of things and wanted to understand, you know, how does it work? How does a company operate? How do they make money? How do they work with customers? So this is where it started to be a mix of tech and business. So I got into sales, support, solution consulting, and then developed over time into managerial roles, did some larger transformation projects. And yeah, that's, you know, how 25, almost 30 years went by. A lot of fun, a lot of pain as well on the way. Yeah, you mentioned this is where I started to take notes about what is working well and what is not working well and try to find the patterns, the root cause of why some initiatives work well and others fail. Yeah, and this is probably what got us here today and why I was excited to be invited to your show. And yeah, you mentioned the book. It's about to come out. It will be launched next week, which is a proud moment, but also a bit scary, right? So you put your stuff out and then, you know, you don't know what comes back.
And, you know, most people, when they do that, they are afraid of what we call to become a dartboard, where people throw darts at you when you put something like this out there, right? And I'm hoping and I'm praying for you that this is not the case at all. Everybody's going to get a lot of benefit out of this. It's going to be a learning experience, I'm 100% certain. But that's one of the fears. And I'm, you know, I keep mentioning on the channel here that I'm writing my own book. It's a memoir plus converted into a business lessons. And, you know, one of the things I'm worried about was I, you know, started putting these things on paper is that am I putting out too much? Is this going to come back to hunt me? Of course, sharing has never been bad, but this is one of the fears or one of the things that goes through my mind, I guess, as I'm putting it together.
Yeah, 100%. I think for me, the biggest learning was, you know, I wrote the book probably three times, right? So it was never good enough. And I restarted and did it all over again. So at some point, it's really, okay, I just stick to what I have to say.
And now you're working with, as an advisor for Mondial Software, advisor to the CEO. What does this company do?
So they are in the space of financial management. So they consolidate financial information. It's the biggest problem is if you have multiple ERP systems, you know, and you want to bring your financial information together, that's a challenge for most companies. So most international companies would have that issue. And bringing data from different systems, different ledgers, different currencies together is really what they're strong at. And yeah, for me, so what I'm doing for them is it's a collective of real experts in their field, but they didn't have a strong background in operations and go-to-market strategies and how to grow and scale a company. So this is why, you know, how we met and how it started that I was supporting them.
Now, after you went through Oracle, Avaya, and PlanView, you had like walked away from a VP level corporate role to build something called the Leadership Operating System, Leadership OS. What was the breaking point that made you say, I need to build this?
It was really me becoming frustrated with seeing the same issues all over again, right? And I could go to the next job and see the same thing again and again and again. And it starts with some very simple things. So, you know, a company needs a strong vision. Now, every company has got a vision and a mission statement, but in most cases, they are more marketing speech than anything else. So I've worked for three very, very different businesses, but their vision and mission statements were almost the same, right? They were generic. They tried to cover basically what they were doing, but weren't inspiring anyone, and they were certainly not guiding their way. And I'm a strong believer that without vision and passion, there's no success. And for me, a strong vision statement should be something that every employee can recall immediately. You know, if you walk around in an office and ask somebody, you know, what's the vision of the company, and they cannot answer, they don't have a clue, and something is really wrong. And it should also guide decision making. So if you take, I mean, a prime example is Amazon, right? They want to be the most customer-centric organization on earth. And this is what, I mean, it's easy to remember, but it's also something aspirational that is guiding decisions. So let's take a small example. You need to make a decision for a new tool. It could be an AI, it could be something else, an ERP, whatever you have, right? And a classical decision making in a matrix organization is top down, is you would consult the global IT department, information security, and you know you would make a decision based on what's best for your control and what you think is best for profit. But if you take really the vision as your guiding principle, you would ask different questions. If you want to become the most customer-centric organization in the world, you would ask which one is better suited to fulfill that vision. What is better for our customers?
Mm-hmm.
And that is making a huge change.
I'd like to get your opinion on this because I've seen it throughout my career. You know, when I work with companies and they say, you know, I'm going to put a mission statement and a vision statement, there is a difference between the two, obviously. And some of the vision statement are meant to be for the inside and the outside facing. But some of the mission statements that I've seen, they're meant to be for the internal. And I've seen mission statements that focuses on profitability. But meanwhile, you've seen like the largest companies in the world and the most successful companies in the world. You see their vision statement and you gave, you know, a very good example about Amazon, you know, it'll be customer centric company. And they didn't say, I want to be the most profitable company. I want to be the most revenue generating company. But the consequences of focusing on a customer, I'm assuming they got all the other objectives.
Yeah, 100%. I'm a strong believer that profit and revenue is an outcome of excellent people doing a great job towards a vision and mission. So it's a result. It's not a goal. it's not a guiding principle.
Now, in your case, but you know, when you work for large companies, and by the way, Avaya is very, I know Avaya well, I guess, when I worked for a company called Genesis, they used to call it Genesis Lab. They do call center software in San Francisco before. I was a database architect for them back in the days and early in my career. And they ended up getting bought by Avaya. They used to be called Exigen or something else. Some other companies, they went through several names. And that's how I got to know Avaya. But you had a front row seat almost in all these companies. And these companies were selling transformational tools. So how many of them actually, in your opinion, have actually transformed internally? I'm just looking here for what is the outside facing versus, and I'm not asking you to speak badly about anybody. What is the inside version of those companies?
So from my experience, the real transformation is very, very limited. I see there are not many large corporations really seriously transforming. And I believe, and this is only a belief, right? I cannot prove that, but I believe there's a lot of fear associated with that. Because real transformation takes a lot of courage, right? It's not like, take agility. Almost every large company that develops something has got agile development processes, right? But they don't have business agility. So they don't have small cross-functional teams that work towards something that can make autonomous decisions. And from my experience, especially a lot of the large companies are hesitant to kick off real transformational programs. There are exceptions. I spoke last year with a large automotive manufacturer. It's a German automotive manufacturer. I spoke to somebody of the extended leadership board. And I won't mention the brand's name, but it's something as a German, you know, we're proud about. You know, I asked him, we met on a conference for Agile Transformation, and I asked him, you know, yeah, you're running programs. He's coming from a finance background. And I asked him, you know, how do you see the competition from China? And what he said was eye-opening to me. He said, look, most people think competition from China is strong because we are too expensive in production. And he said, well, energy is expensive in Germany. Production is not our issue. We are optimized to the max on the production side. Our issue is, in the time we develop a new generation of our flagship car, in the same time our Chinese competitors are developing three generations. And he said, why is that? It is because they are much quicker in decision making. The way they've built their companies they built agile companies from the beginning. They didn't need to transform. So they have teams that can make their own decisions, and it doesn't need, you know, eight layers of management to decide to take screw A or screw B. So this is really what is driving them. And this is why, you know, for them, and I think for a lot of other companies, transformation is not optional. So either you become really business agile, or you'll be just taken out of business over time. And with AI coming to market, this is only putting fuel to the fire. You know, it's, and you can see that companies that have smaller autonomous teams that are able to make their own decisions, they are quick and easy to say, okay, this process could be optimized by AI, and we just hire somebody to do that for us. So they're up and running with that in 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks. Now, I've spoken to a fairly large production company, and they've been working for 1.5 years to implement AI. You know, huge pressure, you know, you need to implement AI to save on cost and become more efficient. So they're running the whole process. Global IT is involved, information security is involved, legal is involved. After 1.5 years, they're signing a contract. Hooray. Okay, they now have Microsoft Copilot across the company. Guess what? What would you think, you know, the business improvement was? Almost next to nothing.
Almost next to nothing, maybe complicated and slowed it down, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen funny stories where, you know, one department was creating internal reports with AI, they become really extensive, and then the receiving end is using AI to analyze that. It's really funny stories.
Bot-to-bot conversation now.
Yeah.
And I hear a lot of people like, this management principle of a lot of CEOs are pushing simplification by using AI, and they use the word simplification in every board meeting and every management meeting to drive down the message that we need to simplify. But meanwhile, and there are two competing theories in the management space. One is centralization, meaning the centralization of the decision making into one or two perhaps central individuals or points in the organization. Everything rolls up to that individual, or everything rolls up to that division or department, etc., which creates a huge bottleneck on everything. And I've seen CEOs involved in approving as simple as expense report for a salesperson as an employee companies, which is makes absolutely no sense at all. What is the job of the CEO, to be honest with you? And the other thing too is I'm noticing is, well, actually a couple of CEOs told me that, and you mentioned it a little briefly, is the fastest way of growing is take regional or organizational pockets of decision-making or practice within your organization and turn them into an entrepreneurial practice from a decision-making perspective. Make them autonomous. And why is that? Because if you look at the growth, for instance, in a variety of industries, you would see that the fastest growing companies are the young startups, the small entrepreneurs, they're still below 200 employees companies, they're growing faster than the companies that with large numbers of assets, people, revenue, etc. They seem to have plateaued. Versus the small companies, they're growing multiple folds on a yearly basis. So when you sit and analyze, you say, well, why the small companies are growing? And then you know that you alluded to it earlier, they're easier to manage, they're easier to make decision. And if they need a software, they go develop it and put it together. And off you go, a few weeks, they're running with the software. If it turns out to be bad, okay, they take it out and they put a new software in. With a larger organization, you're right. There's a lot of checks and balances. There's a lot of approval processes, there's a lot of committees, there's a lot of people that needs to negotiate and discuss these things.
Yeah,
plus, any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, those systems were built last century, right? And they're made for command and control, which was probably the right thing at that time. But if we're looking at what we know today, I mean, what I see in those organizations is they're not only slow in decision-making and execution, but they are also not tapping into the potential of their people. They're not people-centric at all. So being inside those large organizations, I can tell you that the majority of the people is burning out and doesn't have any passion at all about what they're doing. And this is really a shame. And, you know, if you think about distributed decision-making, like those people are making big decisions in their private life. So they're marrying, they're getting kids, they buy a house. So, you know, those people are making really serious decisions in their private life. You know, in their professional life, they're not considered being able to make a $50 decision, which is, you know, that way you're not tapping into the potential of the people. And I personally believe, you know, if you put great people in a great environment, they will play out their fullest potential and be really strong contributors to the business. It's untapped potential in my eyes.
Jürgen, one of the things is that you help companies, for instance, redesign how decision gets made. And I love the idea of distributed decision making because I work for a large organization, and I think I still have a t-shirt that's, I still have a PTSD from working for large organizations. Just like it scarred me for life, I think. Although I love everybody I worked with, the teams were great, the people were great. Just the way the structure is, it's just like, I'm not built for a large organization. And some of us out there, I'm not saying I'm the only one. There are many of us out there that they're not built for that large corporations where you clock in the morning, you go to your office, and then you leave at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's it, you disconnect. Most of us are built to do more. Most of individuals, they go work for these organizations, driven, coming out of school, coming out of colleges, full of energy, full of enthusiasm. And they want to do the right thing. They want to do great things. But then they go into that corporate world, and all of a sudden they find the box. and they're sitting in that box and they can't escape it. So you've helped these organizations, like on your side, I mean, you're helping these individuals, these companies specifically so their AI investment can pay them off at the end of the day. Nobody wants to make an investment. I mean, I've seen large organizations like banks, multi-billion dollar organization, they make these AI investments. In fact, I've had one incident, it was last year. Somebody came in to me and said, Robin, I would like to talk to you about an AI idea that I want to deploy. And I said, okay, well, what is it? He said, I don't have a clue what the idea is. I'm looking for ideas. I said, okay, why do you want to do this? My boss told me that we have to deploy AI. Okay, well, that's it. The boss told you you want to deploy AI, but you have no idea what you want to deploy. Okay, we can explore that. But before we get into this, I think we should have a clue or a bit of an idea. What is this strategy? What do we want to do? Any thoughts or comment on this?
Yeah, 100%. And it's really interesting. I mean, companies are pushed to spend money on AI. And the idea of that is mainly driven by saving cost. You know, oh yeah, we can optimize the process and take out a few people or a larger amount of people. And what I really loved was recently Jensen Huang, CEO of NVIDIA, gave a speech. And what he said was just brilliant. He said something along those lines, if a CEO is taking in AI with the idea to take out people, he's running out of imagination. Because if you would have a huge amount of great people with great ideas, passion, right? And now you take AI with all the possibilities that it's offering, right? What could those amazing people do with amazing technology? They could, you know, change worlds. But if you're just coming from a background of, we could save cost, right? I mean, what you're basically saying is, I don't have a clue, I don't have a vision, and I don't trust any of my people.
Which makes no sense.
Absolutely no. Absolutely no. That's unfortunately a bit of the reality with a lot of corporations today. And it's really painful to hear, right?
I mean, this is the struggle, right? So I think people are now, they're driven by the stock market, I feel like it's at the end of the day, like you look at companies like IBM, et cetera, those large organizations. And when they see the stock dipped, they go and make an announcement because of AI, we're laying off or reducing the cost, I guess they don't call it a layoff. We're going to adjust the balance sheet. That's how, I guess, the corporate talk. And we're going to reduce the balance sheet by laying off a whole bunch of people. It makes no sense because we've seen it already in the past few months. Companies who laid off people, they can't operate without these brilliant people, as you said, Jürgen. They are bringing these people back in. You know, what an embarrassment.
And you know, when you're saying we're firing all those people, what was your idea of them in the first place? So if you're hiring people and you're convinced you hired great people and you have a strong vision of what you want to do with them, right? Now they have better tools, they should produce greater results.
Correct. Correct. And it seems to me that a company who invested in training and educating and teaching their employees for many years, to throw that investment out and to throw it away out of the company, and then, I don't know, are you going to operate without these senior individuals that have been with you for many years? They know your business inside out almost, and then you got to start fresh? That's not a good business decision, in my opinion.
But. No, and you know, if you're good people, you're great people, could spend more time on what brings value to the company by eliminating some of the routine tasks with AI that should provide great value. If you just take marketing, right? If you could use your time to, for example, speak to real customers, you know, not just rely on data and build your hypothesis on how your ideal customer is acting and what your ICP really is, but really talking to them. You would have the time if you don't have to do every single task yourself. So I think with AI, you can free up time that you can spend elsewhere and better.
Mm-hmm. Jürgen, if you were to put a number on what percentage of AI projects fails because of leadership versus technology layer, what do you think that number would look like?
I would say, overall, I would say probably in the area of 80% of all AI initiatives fail. To a certain extent, I mean, failure is, they might still implement stuff, right? But I would say over 80% of the initiatives don't achieve what people were hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a technology issue, but a strategy and people issue. It's a leadership issue.
Do you know, I do a networking event on Friday morning at 9 o'clock, and that's the meeting I was at earlier. And one of the new individual that joined us this morning, she's originally from Albania, but she lives in Switzerland. And she told the group that the Albanian government has now two ministers, that there are AI-based ministers, one for procurement, apparently, and one for to fight corruption, anti-corruption minister. And I was wondering, you know, as you and I were started talking this morning, I was wondering if it's a leadership issue at the corporate level, at what point do we remove the CEO? And I'm thinking out loud here. Do we remove the CEO and replace it with an AI agent if the transformation is what we're seeking here?
Well, it's a good question. It's really, really a good question. So I would never remove a CEO, at least not for now, that has got a strong vision and is using what comes up in terms of technology and using the people to build out something great. But if you're taking a CEO that is just, you know, managing along and doesn't have any vision and just trying to save cost, it's really a good question. Would an AI do a better job?
That's what I was going with this one. I think it's worth thinking about it, because if we are, in some cases, if we are like, we're going to get to an environment where governments are going to be using AI to replace a certain ministry or minister or position in their government. In this case, why not look at the possibility of using a particular CEO to, as an agent, as an AI agent, to deploy faster technology, to remove operational layers that there are not, sometimes there are obstacles in terms of deploying these types of technologies. Even if you do it on a temporary basis, subcontract this to somebody else, to be honest. The lack of vision, you're right, because most of these CEOs, unless you have like those young CEOs that they're going up through the ranks and they still have the creativity juice, I would call it. If you're going into like the older generation that they are, so no disrespect to anybody, and we're all aging and we're all there sometimes. But the creative juice and the going back to what all has been tried and trusted in the past years, and you can't manage companies. And there are a few of them out there. I'm not saying this because I don't know. In fact, I do know. There are many companies out there, they're still managing their organization like in the 50s. And the world has passed many decades before after that.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful, though. I think if you really want to drive massive transformation within an organization, you need this, excited mind with, entrepreneurial spirit. But you also need to have, I would say, a certain level of experience with people, certain level of a standing, that you don't break down under pressure, that you are reliable, like a rock inside stormy waters. So to me, it would really be a mixture. And I was really fascinated by a CEO that he was the founder of a few companies, but he founded a company in the US called the Morningstar Company, and they are producing tomato products, right? But he was not only a CEO, but he was a visionary and a philosopher, I would say. But the whole company was built under the idea that they don't have any middle management, which was fascinating. So it was built on the principle that, you know, there is autonomous teams, they follow a global vision and mission and guiding principles, and those teams have strong commitments and agreement within them, but they can make big decisions on their own. And you know, when he implemented that principle, when he, you know, was establishing the company, a lot of people were laughing about him. You know, they were saying, you know, if you don't control the people, this will never work. You know, it will just not fly. Now, the company is still existing, right? It was founded in the 1970s. It has outperformed every competitor in every year over time. They are the most successful company in their space. And now other companies are following that kind of principle. So it's not just, a feel-good dream. You know, people are working together in small teams and have decision rights. No, it's really something that is working. Mm-hmm. And it's not only feel-good, right? Making decisions in teams and taking on responsibility and accountability takes something. It's not I mean, it really takes courageous people.
Yeah, to change.
Yeah.
Now, your book came out in February 2026, right as agentic AI started going mainstream. Did anything shift in what you were writing about, Jürgen? And as that was happening at the time? And also, it would be good for the audience to know a little bit more about your book as well. And where can I find it if anybody's interested? Where is it listed at? So can they can download it or buy it, etc.?
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon globally. And good question on, has anything changed? I thought a lot about that. You know, it's the development of AI is really, really amazing. You know, what changes within 3 months? I think the principles are still the same. Technology changes. But as we discussed earlier, you know, having a strong vision, understanding your customer really in detail, hiring people that want to work for your vision of a company, those are essential things. And I think they're not going away. It's the opposite. I think those things, those basic things, become even more relevant in the age of AI. As I said, transformation isn't optional anymore. You know, having a strong vision and an idea where you want to go and building out an organizational structure that supports that is key. And it will be even more important with the development of AI. So I wouldn't say the principles changed. I asked myself, you know, when I read my own book, I was thinking about, you know, is it, would I say that differently? Maybe some areas I would add some stuff, but it's super relevant for exactly what's coming up with AI.
And in your opinion, what was the reaction after the book is launched from some of the executives out there? Did they react anyway?
Yeah, I got some feedback. So some were saying, yeah, spot on, I believe in that, and we should revisit. Others were pushing really back. So some of the comments I'm getting is, this is dreamland. No, we are doing that, and it's still not working. You know, I had a discussion with a CEO, and I won't mention his name. So I told him, you know, your metric style organization is out of fashion. That organizational structure doesn't work anymore. And his reply was, we're not running a matrix organization. It's a solution-centric organization setup. I said, sorry, but, you know, it's like a textbook matrix organization, whatever, you know, costume you're putting on that. It's a classical matrix organization. And he was pushing back even on those things. I said, well, man, it's a solution-driven organization, fine, but it doesn't work. And he said, what do you mean? I said, yeah, I can tell you because I've worked for your company in the past. You've got managers, senior leaders that are earning a high salary and they're spending 30 hours per week in alignment and reporting calls. So without contributing to anything else, right? It's just passing on decisions, you know, from top to bottom and reporting back up. So that's not providing any value. And what do you expect this person to actually do if that person is spending 30 hours a week on video calls, just, you know, forecasting, KPI reporting and alignment calls? So in the end, most of your people don't have time. Everybody is super busy and you're producing output, but no outcome. There's very little progress towards anything. And yeah, it was a heated debate.
Jürgen, do you get into the conversation of creating value for this organization, like to understand what the value is internally and externally to their customers? Do you get some of these discussions on the go with some of the CEOs?
Yeah, 100%. So I've been with a company 2 weeks ago in the UK, and the whole discussion was around that. And they had a great leadership team, and their understanding of, you know, that value is the ultimate thing they should be looking at was brilliant. So we discussed, you know, how do we measure value and how do their customers measure value? So what outcome would different people expect and how they are measuring whether the outcome is really delivered? And it was a strong point because they were fully on the same page. If you're not providing value to your customers, and if they don't realize that they have gained any value, they will stop spending money with you. The whole discussion was really on how do we work with customers to understand how their perception of value is, how they are measuring, how they can baseline what they had before, and then after implementing a solution or a service, to make it really visible, not only for that company I was helping, but also for the customer. The customer is spending that money. So if their perceived value is lower than what they're spending, they'll stop spending.
Absolutely. Now, you're operating as an independent advisor, right? So who is your ideal client right now? And are you looking for clients? I'm not sure if you are, but you're probably busy. But what's the conversation to get people like the most excited about? What kind of conversation that you think it will trigger? Well, I want to talk to Jürgen now.
So what would trigger me naturally is somebody who's aspirational and wants to drive something. So I wouldn't take on any mandate where somebody is just pushing back on change, right? This type of, could you help me out? It's not working. But then not being open to change, also to change the way they think. I would push back on that because it would be, we have this value conversation, right? I would ultimately only want to work for somebody or with somebody where I can see it will be beneficial for both sides. If I can see in an early conversation, well, this, I can't provide value, you know, I wouldn't be worth, you know, being hired for that. So I'm a strong believer either I can, and this fairly quickly to find out, you know, if typically in the first or second conversation, both sides get a good feeling of, this is something we could do together or not. And, you know, I'm a strong believer if we don't click and we don't have the similar vision of what we want to do, then it doesn't make sense to work together.
Absolutely. Because, you know, a lot of times I provide fractional CRO services to some customers out there. And you know, like from a revenue perspective, everybody wants revenue, right? So if you know, it's in demand, people want to grow their businesses, and you don't really go any conversation nowadays. And unless people say, you know, I would love to improve my revenue position, nobody wants to say no to that. It's just it's a fundamental that you would probably want to see your revenue grow. However, I mean, as you mentioning earlier in the we'll give the information about your book to the listeners through through the links, etc. We'll provide them where they can find the book. One of the things that you just touched on right now, Jürgen, which is very fundamental, is, you know, when the CEO wants something, in this case, in my case, at least they tell me, I want to grow revenue. Okay, well, the next question would be from me is, how is your management team feels about that? And are they on board with growing? Like, I mean, it sounds such a fundamental question. And, you know, the answer you would typically expect, yes, they want to grow the business. And they eventually report to me and I tell them what to do and they go out and do it. You know what? Yeah, you might think that as a CEO. And you're probably right. I mean, if you tell them, hey, I want to grow the revenue, you're probably going. But if they're fundamentally inside of their heart, they're not on board with that revenue growth journey that you are going to put them on as a CEO, they will find 100 ways to sabotage your journey. And you may end up on a paddle somewhere, you know, using a Canadian observation, in a canoe without a paddle, going upstream with nobody to support you on that journey. You got to bring people along with your whatever strategy you are going to undertake, either revenue growth, customer success stories, or customer service, whatever it is that you're trying to drive your company as far as a vision. Everybody needs to be on board with that, either on board or not on board with that. And to hire somebody like Robin or Jürgen to help you out without doing your homework internally, or allow somebody like Robin and Jürgen to help you out in doing your homework internally, it's got to be something missing out of this loop, right, Jürgen?
Yeah. And a question I would have to you is, you know, from your experience, you know, being a CRO, right? Oftentimes I see CROs separated from the marketing function, customer success function, from other functions, right? So for me, it's always a question, if you want to grow your revenue and you have a chief revenue officer, it's only one part of the equation, right? If revenue is an outcome of great people doing great work in different departments, how do you work together? So how do you see that with, you know, being a CRO and then having a chief marketing officer, a chief customer officer, yes or no, whatever. How do you feel about that?
So yeah, I feel like for me, and I always talk about this particular one, it's called the revenue journey. So there are many pieces of the puzzle to provide revenue. So normally people look at a CRO, go get me new customers. And that's one piece of the puzzle. The second piece of the puzzle is retaining those customers, which would require us to work together with customer success. And generally, customer success teams has to report to the CEO because you need to formulate a full picture on revenue. You can't have just net new revenue as one picture, and then you have to put the puzzle together somehow with using marketing or, you know, there are many pieces that needs to fit in together. In fact, CROs and CMOs, they work together. They do successfully when they work together successfully. If they work independently of each other, then you have issues because you got to use this chief marketing officer to go to market and get new customers, retain customers, and help those existing customers discover your story better, because a lot of these stories are buried somewhere and nobody knows about them. So when I talk about a chief revenue officer, I'm talking about full picture of revenue, not necessarily just go get me brand new customers and let the company decide if they want those customers or not, because a lot of times there's gating for those customers. And what I mean by gating is there's a checks and balances. Do we allow this customer in to become a customer or not? That has not a growth strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah, and as you point out, if there's not a strong bond within that leadership team, but I've worked for companies where the chief marketing officer and the chief revenue officer were just the strongest competitors internally, and then the whole blaming starts. Why are we not growing? The sales arm of the company is saying, we need better marketing. And marketing says, we're delivering on our goals, right? And you're just not converting. And those conversations don't deliver any value, right? I mean, you need a team of different expertises and different experts to work together and say, look, this is where we are. This is where we want to get to. Let's stick our heads together and define a strategy and iterate together quickly. So if something's not working, that's maybe not a failure, but an expected result on the journey, as long as we're not blaming each other. And we have the plan to iterate fast, to try new things. And if they fail to change quickly, you're much better off.
And you bring a very valid point, Jürgen, by having those conversations, and iterating is very, very important. When you're advising CEOs or you're on the CRO journey with a company, et cetera, on the revenue journey with a company, iterating, that's the key point. Because people come to understand right now or expect that when they talk to an expert or talk to a consultant or talk to somebody with a knowledge that they don't have internally, they expect that magic formula that the people come in from the outside, such as yourself, and they give them that magic formula in one sentence and they solve the problem. Well, the world was not built that way. And the expectation here is we got to try a few things together. Whatever worked, we're going to learn from it and do more of it. And whatever is not working, we're going to stop doing. And to discover that and to go back and forth on this one in an agile way, I think that's the successful formula. Nobody's going to come in from the outside of an organization and says, you know what? You've been doing this business for 20 years. You have no idea what you're doing. I'm going to tell you what you need to do. That's unrealistic. It doesn't exist. We got to get to know each other and work together, I think.
Yeah, 100%. And things, the world is changing. We discussed that with AI, with, all the things happening in the world, So what that means is your definition of the ideal customer profile and why they would be buying a certain, service or product might change very quickly. So even if you found a good approach 2-3 years ago, that might have changed. And, what I find fascinating is, we touched on that earlier, is if you're just relying on, a picture that you painted 3-4 years ago, and then you rely just on data. I mean, data is so big, and millions are invested into getting more data together. But sometimes it's important also to speak to real people. So go to your best customer and ask them, why did you spend money on us? Are you still happy with that? What value are you getting? And if you need to decide again today, would you decide for us again? If not, why? Those things, I think data can give you a lot of insight, but if you're forgetting to talk to real people to validate that your assumptions that you're building on data is correct, I think you're missing out. And I see that a lot of times.
You know, you reminded me of an anecdote. I was a sales manager for North America for one of the largest companies that produced fiber optic testers back in the days. I was talking like two decades ago almost. And I was sitting with this customer, ended up like within 1 hour meeting, buying something from me worth close to $3.5 million US in one order. And the company never seen an order this size at all. Like it was one of the highest order that they received. So the CEO was located way outside of our time zone, need to travel like 6-7 hours to get here. He called me up. He said, I want to meet this customer. I said, why do you want to meet the customer? He said, I would like to know why they bought from us. So I'm flying over, set up the meeting. I want to see him face to face. I'll never forget that. And I learned a lot from that experience because you bring a very valid point. Why did you choose us? Why was it a successful experience? Why do you like to stay with us? What is making it work for you in our relationship? This data that you collect face to face from people, it's way different than data you collect digitally. And the data digitally nowadays, keep in mind that that can be spoofed, that can be misinterpreted, that can be mistakes happen sometimes. We collect digital data in a wrong way, and we end up making the wrong decisions based on these digital data.
Yeah, and talking to real people makes a huge difference. And you know, there's different people involved in decision-making, and they all have their own mind. They all have their own internal goals that they need to achieve, their own pressure, their own circumstances. So talking to them, you really get a better sense of, you know, what makes it value for them. I think, you know, especially if you're talking about sales and marketing, that's key to have those, you know, details that you can really use with your customers, with your prospects that you're trying to get on board. You know, if you clearly understand what the people that were involved in a decision or that are using your service or product, what they are saying and what they are missing, what they like, then you can really get a much deeper and richer insight that you can use for your future customers so that they will like you as well, right? And say, mm-hmm. Okay, this was real. I mean, first that they sign up with you, but then also that they would say, this was really great, was the right decision.
Now, just to wrap it up, if you don't mind, Jürgen, if a CEO was listening right now, what do you like them to take away from this conversation?
I would say really think about how you're building decisions. And I think the number one question I would ask is the leadership fear-based or inspirational? You know, are you acting out of fear to disappoint investors, private equity shareholders, or do you have a vision that you follow and do you want to learn and you know, inspire people to make it a great company?
Great. And you know what? I want to remind our audience here, our listeners and viewers, that the book, The Leadership Operating System by Jürgen Dauck, is available on Amazon. You can find it on Amazon. You can download it, buy it, etc. And it's available globally to everybody who's interested. And to my listeners in Germany who are growing by the day, and I checked my stats for the last 7 days, I got about 200,000 listeners or viewers in Germany on a 7-day period. So I appreciate you. I love you all. And I want to thank you so much for joining me on this journey. Jürgen, any last comments before we wrap it up?
Really great conversation, Robin. I appreciate being on the show. And this is really a topic, you know, it's not business. It's really dear to my heart because I'm a strong believer that we can create workplaces where great people can, you know, deliver great, great results and benefit to customers. So it's a passion. And thanks for giving the platform for that.
I really appreciate your time with me, Jürgen Dauck. Very, very interesting conversation. You're welcome back to the channel anytime. Consider it your home. Anytime you feel like you want to tell another story or you have a news or you have an update, would love to hear from you. I'd love to bring you back on the podcast. My podcast is only 2.5 years, but it's been going crazy. And I've been so blessed with guests such as yourself and audience that loves what we talk about. It's great to have you with me today. I really appreciate it. And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for listening in. If you're coming on our audio channels, thanks for bringing us with you to the gym or on your walk and listening into our podcast. I really appreciate that. And if you're coming on our YouTube channel, thanks for watching us. I appreciate your support. And I highly encourage you to subscribe to our channel if you're interested, no pressure. And also, if you like to see a summary of the podcast, I do summarize all of our conversations on robinayoub.blog, where each one of those episodes is summarized in a couple of minute read. You can get the gist, the Coles Note version of the podcast. I encourage you to check it out as well. Thanks, everybody, and I'll see you at the next episode. And thank you so much, Jorgen. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks. Bye-bye.